to Shortwave, a PBS NewsHour podcast about foreign events that have an impact close to home. I'm NewsHour foreign affairs reporter-producer PJ Tobia. A warning, this episode covers some difficult material. It's probably not appropriate for children. It is about children, though, a lot of children. Last summer, the wave of child migrants crashing on U.S. shores was cresting. According to the U.S. Border Patrol, in 2014, nearly 55,000 children crossed the U.S. border, all by themselves. Another 70,000 came accompanied by a parent, usually their mom. The vast majority of these children and families came from Central America's Northern Triangle countries, Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. One of these children was an 11-year-old boy named Nodwin. He made it from El Salvador all the way to the U.S. border, all by himself, before nearly drowning in the Rio Grande near Texas.
The boat suffered a puncture, and I went under the water. But I managed to grab onto a piece of wood, and that's how I saved myself.
Shortly after his battle with the Rio Grande, Nodwin was in the custody of the U.S. Border Patrol. From there, he was reunited with his mother and father in Northern Virginia. Like many of the record number of children who made the journey to the U.S. last year, Nodwin says he was running from unspeakable violence. When he was 9 years old, Nodwin witnessed a boy, his friend, gang-raped in a park near his house in El Salvador. The attackers, part of a local drug mafia. They assaulted Nodwin's friend when he wouldn't join their crew.
They were stripping a kid naked, and I went to tell the kid's mom. Later I went home, but I didn't want to leave my house because they could have done the same thing to me.
Soon after, his parents hired a smuggler, and Nodwin began his journey north. He arrived here in late 2013. From that time, through the fall of 2014, the U.S. saw a massive increase in the number of child migrants arriving at the U.S. border. It was the high watermark of a years-long trend. But since last fall, the number of child migrants who have come to the U.S. from Central America dropped significantly. The Washington Office on Latin America, a think tank sympathetic to migrants, projects a 39% decrease from last year in the number of children who try to come to the United States from Central America. They also project a similar drop in family arrivals. There are a lot of reasons for this, and we'll get into them later this summer. But more than 50,000 of these kids did make it to the U.S. last year. What happened to them? Well, like Nodwin, 36% of them ended up with a family member or sponsor already living in the United States. And being reunited with his parents has helped Nodwin acclimate to his new surroundings.
He's doing excellent. I mean, he's in a better position than a lot of the kids that we see come over.
That's Nodwin's attorney, Brian Murray. I reached him on his cell phone as he headed to court. When Nodwin arrived in the U.S., his parents hadn't seen him since he was a baby. Nodwin, his mom and dad, had to rebuild their relationship from scratch. He had to start a new school, learn English, and of course, he missed his grandmother back in El Salvador. She was the only parent he'd ever known. Last summer, when I asked Nodwin if he missed her, he couldn't even answer. He just immediately started sobbing. But Murray says Nodwin's come a long way in the last year.
Because he came young enough to be able to really adapt, and he's just flourishing here. He's doing very well in school, making very good grades. He's learning English fast, and he really loves being here.
He'll be here for at least a few more years. That's because the final hearing for his case won't be until September of the year 2019. That's right, 2019. By that time, he will have been in and out of immigration court and asylum hearings for more than 6 years. That's more than a third of his life. What does it mean to be in limbo so long? On the one hand, not much. As Murray said, Nodwin's leading the life of a typical 12-year-old, going to school, playing soccer, making friends. But as he gets older, Nodwin will encounter more roadblocks. Without a green card, he can't get a driver's license or qualify for in-state tuition, college, for example. Believe it or not, a 4-year wait for a hearing is not at all unusual for these kids. There are more than 70,000 unaccompanied child cases awaiting resolution in immigration courts. That means long waits and uncertain futures. Besides the uncertainty, for Nodwin, there's another problem.
His claim is based on the fact that as a young boy, he's subject to being targeted.
Many asylum claims are based on an applicant being part of a persecuted social group. Being a Tutsi during the Rwandan genocide of 1994, for instance, would have been a legitimate claim. But just being afraid that someone is going to kill you if you return home? not so much.
It's not sufficient that you just have a fear of being harmed in your country. You have to ensure that that fear has a nexus or a connection to one of the protected grounds, and it could be race, religion, ethnicity, political opinion, or membership in a particular social group.
Murray says that Nodwin is in the category of being a child in a place where children are often targeted by drug gangs. Many immigration attorneys are trying to make similar claims right now. But if Nodwin is 16, by the time he gets in front of a judge for the final say in his case, he might have a problem.
His claim is about his experience as a very young boy, and he's going to have a different peer group and a different status in society at 16 than he did at 10 years old. If he's no longer in that category, even if he's able to establish that he did have a well-founded fear at one point, his fears no longer connect directly to that social group by the time he's actually going to have his case heard.
Some would argue that if he's no longer part of that group of young, vulnerable children, then he really has nothing to worry about if he moves back.
Right, and that's the pitfall of asylum. Just because he doesn't fit into the legal boxes doesn't mean that he no longer has reasonable fear of being harmed.
For Nodwin, having both of his parents here in the U.S. and living together is probably a good thing. Ironically, it also makes his chances at a visa more difficult.
For those who come here without one or both their parents, they may have the ability to get a green card through what's known as special immigrant juvenile status.
Unlike an asylum visa, the special immigrant juvenile visa, or SIJ, can be granted by a local family court. Most visas go through grown-up court. But to get an SIJ visa, a child's guardian must prove that the child was abused, neglected, or abandoned by at least one of their parents.
In Nodwin's case, he wouldn't qualify under any circumstances because he has both parents here and in his life.
Despite this, Murray says he still likes Nodwin's chances at getting a green card. He's pursuing other legal strategies that might enable Nodwin to get some kind of status before 2019. Nodwin's lucky. Besides having both parents here, he also has a lawyer to argue his case in court. Many don't. According to the Center for Immigration Studies in Washington, a think tank that wants a more restrictive immigration policy, many of these kids don't even show up for their hearings. They've just melted away into larger populations of undocumented migrants. That's it for Shortwave. Shortwave is a production of PBS NewsHour. Sarah Just, executive producer. Justin Kenny is NewsHour's senior producer for foreign affairs and defense. Travis Dobb, creative director. Vanessa Dennis created the graphics for Shortwave. The music is by Jeremy Gibson. Special thanks for editorial oversight and inspiration to Hari Srinivasan. I'm your host and producer, PJ Tobia. I hope you'll join us next time for Shortwave.